Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Thanks for your good feedback for some of the stuff that I've posted lately. I know it's a little bit of a different flow, and I actually want to kind of incorporate that into my teaching today. So since we're not doing a music thing, I'll just get right into it. Jonah, unless you brought your guitar and you just happen to have some music, but otherwise we'll just get into it. I actually haven't had any real negative feedback. I know I've pushed the envelope a lot the last few days. Nothing to speak of. I've been entangled with some people wanting to talk about other people. That's not my it's not my conversation. I can't control what anybody else does or says. Whatever they say, whatever you say is on you. So not everybody understands that. But anyway, I know that for those of you that really hear my voice, I know I've introduced you to a lot of, I've added a lot of things to the mix. I don't think I've abandoned anything. I've just added over the years. And I've expressed my appreciation for those of you that have followed. And I remember, gosh, a couple of years ago when I first introduced meditation, I didn't know how that was going to go over because, I was talking to Reba last week, and I said, I don't know if you saw this, but a year ago I posted something about her. She was in a time of recovery in her own personal life, and she had posted some things about doing yoga, and the Christians just went berserk on her. Like, it was just, like, they were just incensed that she was practicing yoga, and I thought, wow, Christians really are very narrow-minded. So, in general, that's a narrow-minded generalization, so let me say, not all Christians, but just everyone that pretty much that I've talked to and have known for my entire life. But outside of that, and all I've ever known is Christians, really. But outside of that, I'm sure they're lovely people. You know, when I introduced meditation, you guys were like, we got it. And the thing I've loved about Metron and the approaching 6 years since we've been doing this is I can have an artist, I can have a Chelsea Shag who does not identify as Christian at all, who's in there singing John Lennon's Imagine, and y'all are all tilting back and forth. And the next month I had Judah, and Judah's got everybody worshiping. They all got their hands up. I thought, this is a very mature and flexible group of people. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. It's not, I believe the quest for truth is not an either or. I think it's a yes and. Like in the little over a year since I've been doing, close to 2 years since I've been writing a daily meditation, it's all been about things like visualization and power of intention and very lofty kind of super spiritual. I use the scriptures, but also, you know, when I hear somebody that's from another stream, I don't automatically want to build a wall with them. I want to build a bridge and say, okay, well, what are we agreeing on? That's why if somebody calls me Pentecostal or charismatic, I don't bristle at that because I think, well, yeah, I am, you know, I am that. I remember one time last year, I led a meditation and then gave a message in tongues afterwards. I thought, well, that has to have been a first. Somebody tell Kelly Varner in heaven, I'm still doing things nobody's done before. But I love that. I don't make any apology for that. And so with things that have happened in the last few weeks in our country, I have felt like in no way abandoning the idea of visualizing a better world. I know things like poverty in a very real sense can be a mindset. I understand that. I've taught on that for years. John said, you prosper and he wants you to prosper and be in health even as your soul prospers. So I understand that. I also know that there is a a way that you can be out of touch with the actual sufferings of people that can make you sound like you are not really aware of their suffering. I love that scripture in Hebrews 4 where it says, we have not an high priest who cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. So as much as I want to be lofty and visualize a better world and see beyond racial division, I also am in the real world enough to know that it's not an either or. I can be aspirational and aware. You know, Dr. King's famous speech was about a dream. The thing that made that speech so resonate with so many people is because it was aspirational. It wasn't just fixating on what the problem was. It was, I'm seeing big picture. And so you can't ignore that. But you also can't ignore that sometimes there are practical things that were not included in the big picture. And they don't, those two ideas don't have to be mutually exclusive. You can be an idealist and a realist at the same time. I was thinking about scriptures last night, like Matthew 10:16. Jesus, it's a interesting animal analogy he uses there, because he says, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves, therefore be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Wise as serpents, harmless as doves. I've taught on that for years. That's got to be the ultimate oxymoron. I mean, if you really want to get theological about it, the animal symbol we have for the Holy Spirit is a dove, and the animal symbol we have for the devil or for Satan is a serpent. So Jesus is basically saying, take the best parts of the Holy Spirit and Satan and make that work for you in a positive way. I mean, you got to be pretty mature to be able to grasp that concept, because some people think it's all dove and no serpent. Some people think it's all serpent and no dove. To the Corinthians over there in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, Paul is talking to them about the gifts of the Spirit. And it's 1 Corinthians 14 is funny to me, because back in the day when I used to go to a lot of debate things about the baptism of the Holy Spirit. I was kind of on the debate circuit of going to Southern Baptist churches and arguing with them about whether it was okay to speak in tongues or not. I did that until one night I walked out and I had won my argument, but nobody had been filled with the Spirit. I remember walking out and I heard the voice inside me saying, now why exactly are you doing this? And I remember thinking, I'm doing this for you. I'm defending you. And I felt the voice say, you're not, I didn't ask you to do this. But I remember in those debates, people on both sides of the argument would use 1 Corinthians 14. Because in that chapter, Paul says, I thank my God I speak in tongues more than you all. So the tongue talkers would use that as saying, see, Paul said he spoke in tongues more than anybody, and he thanked God for it. Well, later in the thing, he says, if somebody comes into your church and all you do is speak in tongues, they're going to think you're crazy. So that's a whole other paradigm on that. And he's in that same little passage, he says, I would rather speak five words with my intelligence than 1,000 words in the Spirit that people don't understand. So it's a very balanced treatise about that particular gift of the Spirit. But in that chapter, I think it's verse 26, he says, brethren, I would like you to be children in areas of malice. But when it comes to intelligence, I want you to be men. Of course, now we would say the more politically correct, I want you to be adults. He was speaking to a male audience. But what he was saying is there's a time to be childlike. As a matter of fact, Jesus said, if you're not like a child, you can't enter the kingdom. But when the IRS tells you your taxes are due, they would prefer you to be an adult. You can't just send them I'm not paying my taxes, but here's a pretty sheet out of the coloring book that I color. Isn't it pretty? I stayed inside the lines. I can tell you this, not by experience, but I'm pretty sure the IRS is not going to endorse that part of childlikeness. So there's a time to be childlike in your purity of heart. There's also a time, like Paul wrote in another letter to the Corinthians, to put away childish things. So For those of you that prefer I talk more about things in existence and manifestation, that hasn't gone anywhere at all. But I also, I referred to this a few weeks ago, but there's a scene in The Color Purple, if I may refer to it for the umpteenth time, where, remember after Sophia went to prison, and then they finally let her for punching the mayor, the white mayor, and then after years, they let her out, but she became like basically a slave to the mayor's wife, Miss Miller. And there's a scene where it's like Christmas Day, and Miss Millie is driving Sophia up to the little town store. And, you know, she's oblivious to the fact that Sophia hasn't seen her children in 11 years. Her eyes all messed up, because remember when the sheriff came out, he hit her with a pistol. And so it's like she's unaware of her suffering. And she says to her, how long has it been since you've seen your children? And she says, I think it's been about 11 years. She goes, well, that's a shame. I'm going to take you home and let you see them the whole day, the whole day. And then she goes in and says to the store clerk, do you think there's anything to life on Mars? And it's just such a telling statement that here she's right here in the car with someone who's really suffering, and she's talking about life on Mars. Now, having said that, you know, a few days ago when they did the new, is it a space shuttle, or they're taking people to the space shuttle? Taking people. All right. I have to say, I was glad to see it. As a matter of fact, that day so much crap was going on in the country, I wanted to say, did they have an extra space? I mean, this sounds like, I mean, because I'm real close to bringing back the rapture, so... maybe there is no hope for this planet and we should just go somewhere and start over. Some people looked at that as, wow, this is really out of touch with what's going on in the world. There's another way to look at it as, while we're dealing with the problems in the world, we're also aware that science is creating new realities. I personally want to hold on to both of those things. I want to remain aspirational. I want to believe that we can speak a better world into existence. But I also don't want to be oblivious to what is going on. And just when I think, you know, if I may refer to another movie, remember in The Mafia, The Godfather, who was it? Was it Michael Corleone that says, every time I get out, they pull me back in? I feel like, you know what, you're a white man, you've said enough. You've said enough about the black experience. Just stop it and go back to talking about, you know, rainbows and all that other stuff. And then I'll read something that a white person posts and I'm like, oh no, I'm going to say a couple more things that, not to black people, but maybe I can help some white people maybe see this a little more clearly. Like, for instance, and I'm going to connect this to Father's Day in just a moment, so stay with me. This thing that happened a little before George Floyd's murder. And, you know, the thing where the one, I don't think her name was actually Karen, but, the white woman that was in the dog park, and the black guy says to her, you need to put your dog on a leash, and they have this altercation which she films. And what's interesting, hey Brenda, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And the very fact that the white woman says to him while her dog is going nuts, it's a very stressful video to watch. But she says, I'm going to call the cops and tell them that an African-American man is threatening me. The very fact that she said that means, without her knowing it, she already knows the system is on my side. Like when people say there's no such thing as systematic racism, I think, yeah, there is. Even white people who don't see it because they're not victimized by it, still know how to exploit it. Why did she have to say, I'm going to say an African-American man? Why could she? Because he was not threatening her. But why couldn't she just say, I'm going to tell them someone's threatening me or a man is threatening me? The fact that she said, I'm going to tell them an African-American man means, and she said it with such confidence, it meant that she knew the cops are not going to question me about this. They are already predisposed to believe my side of the story. And in some ways, you know, when you look at actual videos of violence, it's terrifying and chilling. Something about that one was kind of the scariest thing I've seen yet because it was so subtle. Like, when you see actual police brutality, and I don't even think I should have to say this. I am not anti-cop. If you read into it that I'm anti-cop, your depth is about like that, if that. I'm not. Somebody yesterday posted, I just feel like all the cops and the EMTs and the firefighters are all getting a bad rap. And I'm like, when did the EMTs get a bad rap? I mean, really? I don't remember reading that. But anyway, that's one reason I don't mind paying I pay a lot of taxes. And I'd never mind it because I think, well, people who are paid, like firefighters and cops, they got to be paid. So, you know, I mean, I'm kind of idealistic about that kind of stuff. Anyway, I am not in any ways anti-cop, but I'm also aware that, yeah, there are some things that need to be addressed. And is it uncomfortable? Yes, it is uncomfortable. I mean, even me, I mean, I just sometimes some of the conversations I get pulled into, I think, whoo, this has got the ick factor. You know, you might not like telling your child about where babies come from. It is an unpleasant conversation. I remember when Jared was about 9. I'm sure he will not like that I'm saying this, but he won't see this. And he hasn't liked things that I've said for so many years that I don't think this would be a problem. But he had said something. He had found his mom had found a note that he had written to a girl that she showed it to me. I felt like it was benign. I thought, that's just the way 9-year-old boys talk. I think, let's don't make this a bigger deal than it is. It was not sexual harassment, but it was something that was a little bit edgy. And she said, well, you need to talk to him. You need to talk to him. Which I was like, okay, I don't know when I got included in the parenting here, but all right, I'll rise to the occasion. So I remember I took him for a ride. I think we went to get an ice cream or something. And I said, Jared, your mom made me aware of this note that you wrote to this girl. And it's a perfectly normal thing for you to say at your age because you're coming, you know, you're becoming aware of sex and sexuality and whatever you learn. I would rather you hear it from me and then you hear it from your friends, because I can tell you the stuff I heard growing up was not accurate. I mean, for many years, I didn't come out because I thought, I don't think I'm gay. I just think some people told me some really wrong stuff. I mean, because I remember what the Methodist pastor's son told me that men and women did. And the way he described that to me, I thought, I will never do that if that's what happens. And as it turns out, that's not what happens. But, you know, I learned that some 20 years later. Anyway, by that time, it had permeated into my DNA. But anyway, Jared, it was always, all my kids spoke like adults. They just all did. And Jared said, he looks at me at 9 and he says, Dad, I'm a little uncomfortable talking about this with you. And all of a sudden, I felt super creepy. You know, like, hey, we're going to talk dirty. And I said, well, okay, I don't want to tell you anything that you're not ready to hear, but like, when do you think you'd be ready? He says, I don't know. He said, we should have this talk when I'm like 13 or 14. This is very premature. And I mean, I ended up apologizing to him because I feel like maybe this was, I probably should have just trusted my instincts and not dealt with it at all. But the fact is, and I don't think we ever did have that talk, but I guess he figured it out. I'm assuming by now. He's about to turn 37, so I'm assuming he I guess. I mean, should I? Yeah. Jonah, I'm available if you need to talk afterwards. The thing is, there are uncomfortable conversations you have to have sometimes. You just have to have them. That's part of being an adult. And denial is a luxury that some people can afford, other people can't afford. I don't necessarily think we're just going to be in chaos mode forever. I don't know if you saw, there was one of the things I posted yesterday, because somebody in my messenger, I guess they don't really read my page, so they had written me something about white people being silent on these issues, and your silence is speaking, and I just start sending them, you know, boom, boom, boom. I'm just like loading, here's everything I've said about it just in the last 2 weeks. You probably should scroll down my page before you lump me in with somebody else. I may not be perfect, but I have been anything but silent. And but in one of the teachings this week, I wasn't even gonna do one that day, because I think a little bit of this goes a long way. I really do. I think if you say too much about something, it just becomes, pardon the pun, white noise. But there was one day I woke up and I was just thinking about Elijah, the prophet Elijah. And I don't know why I was thinking about him. I mean, I could tell you, I do not read the Bible every day. I hope you're not traumatized by that. But I've got a pretty good idea of what it says. I mean, that's, you know, I'm pretty familiar. And the great thing now about Google, if there's a passage you can't find, if you just know kind of the phrase or kind of what it says, I mean, you can find just about anything. So that's very helpful to me. But, you know, with Elijah, there's a story about it where he prayed it would stop raining, and it stopped raining for, I think it was 3.5 years. And then there was another time where he prayed that rain would come back, and there was no sign of it. And in the story, remember, he tells his servant to go, he said, go look outside the window and see if you see any sign of rain. And the servant went one time, two times, three times, four times, five times, six times he goes and looks out the window. And in each of those six times, he comes back and he says, there's no sign of rain. And the seventh time he goes back, he comes back and he says, everything looks pretty much the same, but I do see a cloud the size of a man's hand. Now, if I look around today, I wouldn't call this a cloudy day, but I can see clouds. Definitely more than a cloud the size of a man's hand. And I don't think you would cancel a picnic that you were planning if you saw a cloud the size of a man's hand. If you were planning an outdoor wedding and somebody said there's a cloud about the size of a man's hand, you would not call off the wedding. It's kind of a nothing burger. But Elijah saw deeper, and he said, I hear the sound of abundance of rain. He said, run, because the bottom is about to drop out. And I wasn't even going to post anything about that. And I looked at, y'all remember Dottis Elder, her husband Curtis was part of our tech team. She had posted a video. I didn't remember I'd ever sung the song. I remember we did it, but I forgot that I sang the solo on it. And it was the song Days of Elijah, which means different things to different people. I'm sure if my mom listened to that song, she would hear something entirely different in it than what I hear. And I think that's great. That's why I can sing. Like this morning, I wasn't really feeling emotional about this first Father's Day so much until in my memories, it was from a few years ago, Ken took a video of, it was my mom and my dad, my Uncle Don, my Aunt Clarice, and Carlton Pearson, and we're all singing around the piano singing The Love of God. And I kind of, Ken didn't see it. He was in there scrambling some eggs for me, but I kind of broke down for a minute, and I thought, I'm glad that those songs can still touch me. I have not renounced all of that. I've tried to include it in where I am now. Jesus said the kingdom of God is like a man who brings treasure out of his house, both things both old and new. But I wasn't going to post a video that day, but I somehow it came up. I guess she must have tagged me in it. It was a video of us doing Days of Elijah at Church of the Now in 2009. And I don't know, it was just so, it was just such a an unusual, I'm thinking about Elijah, then I see that Days of Elijah. So I ended up posting it and got a lot of good feedback from it. And the reason I'm bringing that up is, in the midst of everything that has gone on and is still going on, I mean, at least this morning I woke up, you know, I woke up and I turned on the news like that. Like, please tell me there wasn't something that went down in Tulsa after I went to bed last night, you know. I mean, just please tell me that didn't happen. And it didn't. I mean, there were other issues, but, there, you know, everything seemed to have gone off peacefully. And depending which news channel you watch, they've taken parallel universes to a whole new level, because there's no official news anymore. There's the news of your choosing. There's the news of your ideology. There just is. I watch the one that endorses mine. You watch the one that endorses yours. I mean, we just do. When I'm at mom's house, she has a thing where you can see four channels at once. You see MSNBC, Fox News, BBC, and CNN. And when you watch them doing that, they're on completely different planets, completely. So, you know, I'll save that for another. You know, back in my day, Walter Cronkite came on at 6 and 11, and what he said was it. That was the news. And there was nothing else to say about it. We are long past that day, so you have to choose which reality you're going to live in. But whatever reality you're in, I am seeing little things like changes in police policies. Little thing, you know, you may think it's ridiculous to get rid of Aunt Jemima. If you read the history of minstrel shows and where the Aunt Jemima character came from, you know, why be upset about that? If you think it's ridiculous, you don't have to weigh in on it. It's just whatever syrup you put on your pancakes is going to taste just the same. And so little by little, if I see little movements toward, all right, it hasn't fixed racism, but at least people aren't being silenced. And if they're being silenced, they just push back. I want to tell people who are anti-Black Lives Matter, stop telling people not to do it, because people are just going to keep painting Black Lives Matter in ginormous letters until every freeway in the United States has got listed. You're not going to, saying something against it is not going to silence that. It's just not. So just now, just, you know, if I don't care if you are in the Ku Klux Klan, just say, yes, Black Lives Matter, and be done with it. Because otherwise, the argument's going to keep going, as it should keep going. I don't know why that's so difficult for people to say anyway, but I never did get that. But but then again, there was some woman last night. I don't even know how in the world I became friends with her. She's some prophetess, and she posted on her line, I want to know why white men like to have sex with animals. I was like, what? I haven't seen that in a while. So I was she'd done this long post about how white men are into bestiality more than anything else. And I thought, well, that's one I haven't heard. And she actually had several friends of mine. I don't know them, but they're Facebook friends of mine that were agreeing with her. Like, that's what's wrong with white people, is they'd rather be with sheep and dogs and stuff. I thought, well, I thought I'd heard everything. I'm going to unfollow and unfriend her, because there's some things you say about white people. I'm like, all right, touche. That probably is true. That one, I'm thinking not. I mean, maybe I didn't live in the country long enough, but at least nobody that I know. I mean, I'm not going to repeat what Eddie just said about squirrels in the city. Anyway, so you see crazy stuff on both sides. You definitely do. And I think I've made that point sufficiently. What's that got to do with Father's Day? I want to talk about this for a moment. And then I'll turn this part off and then we'll meditate. Which, by the way, the meditation last week was really, really good. I could tell we all needed it, and thank you for staying in that flow with me. And we are still on for August, first weekend of August on Driftwood Beach. I mean, I don't care if there has been a, God forbid, a relapse of COVID by then, and if they've got everything shut down, I'm going to be on that beach. Now, I may have a hazmat suit on, but I will be there. So if you're wondering, are we on or off? No, I will be there. If you would like to meditate on August the 2nd and 3rd on Driftwood Beach, you will not be alone. I promise you I will be there. Pretty sure Ken will be there. Ken, will you be there? Yes, okay. So there will at least be, if it's just you, there'll at least be three of us. We're two or more gathered together. But in talking about this idea of an idealistic realist or a realistic idealist, or even the man saying to Jesus, I do believe, but help my unbelief, or there's, you know, 20 scriptures that come to mind that say to me, believe in the big picture, stay optimistic, but remain aware of the things that people are really going through. Because right now, if you're white and you just keep talking about, I want all this talk to go away, we're all one, we're all one in Christ, it comes across that you're tone deaf to the real issues that people are dealing with. So don't hide behind your theology. I believe the world is one too. But if you read, so many people talk about we should be building bridges, building bridges, building bridges. Go to their Facebook page. You'll see they ain't building a lot of bridges. I mean, there's nothing reconciliatory on their page at all. So it's, you know, I'm just gonna have to call BS on that. Sometimes when people say we should be building bridges, that's code for, I wish black people would shut up already. You know, what more do they want? That's really what that is. Now, what's that got to do with Father's Day? Let me tell you, Father's Day and Mother's Day historically have been my least favorite days to minister. And they kind of rank up there with Easter. I don't enjoy Easter either because you have to talk about the resurrection, which I'm fine with, but it's like I've told this a million times, but Scott Pettit's uncle, who now has gone on, he said, you know, I like your bishop, but every time I go to church, all he's talking about is the resurrection. He said, that's because you only come on Easter. I mean, that's what you have to talk about it that day. But also, Easter is generally your biggest crowd, so it just has audition written all over it. It's like, you know, we've got the biggest crowd right now, so we've got to do our best. Easter on Sunday morning feels way too synthetic to me for me to really enjoy it. Father's Day is not as difficult as Mother's Day because people are typically way more sentimental about moms than they are about dads. But generally, Mother's Day, when I grew up in the Church of God, and in the Church of God hymnal, in the back, in the index, they would have hymns categorized by topic, like Christmas hymns, discipleship hymns, and the ones for mother, the mother hymns were as nearly as long as anything else. I mean, there was a lot of mother stuff going on. And, you know, we would sing them and people would cry. And back in the day, I don't think we did it for Father's Day, but I remember for Mother's Day, traditionally, if your mother was still living, you would wear a red flower. Men would wear a red boutonniere, usually a carnation. Women would wear a red corsage. If your mother had passed, you would wear a white one. That was all. I mean, Mother's Day of my life, I remember my dad would go to the florist, and on the night before, when I'm eating breakfast, Mom would say, your flower's in the refrigerator, and you go put that on. And that's kind of, at least the churches I'm aware of, that's kind of died out now. I don't remember people did it for Father's Day so much, but Father's Day still evokes a lot of stuff. People have unresolved issues with their fathers. Some people didn't know their fathers. Some people had bad relationships with their fathers. Some people had wonderful relationships with their fathers, but their fathers are gone now. So they're dealing with all of that. So, I am an empath. And when you are an empath and prophetic, you have to say what you got to say, but you also feel what people are feeling. Like the reason I take so many rabbit trails, go down so many rabbit holes in my teaching, is not that I have ADD. I mean, I might, but that's not the reason. That's not manifest that way. It's that I feel people pulling on me in the spirit. I feel people saying, talk about this, talk about this. So I'll end up saying something completely unrelated to my topic because somebody communicated with me on a subterranean level. And then afterwards they'll come to me and say, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. Like I've told you this before, but one Sunday morning I was preaching, and I don't even remember how this factored into my sermon, but I started singing Midnight Train to Georgia. And of course everybody joined in. They start singing all the backup parts that the Pips did for Gladys Knight. And I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this, but let me get back on topic. Well, afterwards, there was a fan, because the story of Midnight Train to Georgia was about a man who goes to California to become a star, and his dreams are dashed, and he wants to come back home. It's actually kind of a sad song about how he, he's realized he's not going to make it in Hollywood, so he gets back on the Midnight Train to Georgia, and his woman is waiting for him there. But there was a family that came to me afterwards. They said, we were about to move to California, and we were putting our house up for sale tomorrow. And on the way to church today, my wife said, what if it's like Midnight Train to Georgia? What if we're not supposed to leave? And he said, we're about to go to church. Why are you talking about Midnight Train to Georgia? And she said, so help me God, we walk into church and you start singing Midnight Train to Georgia. We nearly fell out. And I said, well, thanks for telling me that, because people think I'm scatterbrained. They don't realize I'm operating at a higher level than, I mean, I just am. I'm not saying I'm smarter than people. It's just when you're an empath, I didn't realize it till a few years ago. I didn't realize I could feel people so deeply. And if I may refer to this again, I started Church in the Now on a prophecy. It was given to me in 1985, and the woman said in the prophecy, she said, people will say of you, like they said of the prophets of old, surely the man has been in my bedchamber, for nobody knows that I've said this or done this. But and that was, 35 years ago. There is, I don't know, there's never been a week, but there's, well, now with social media, it's rare that 2 days goes by without me posting something and somebody responding saying, get out of my head. Do you have my house bug? How did you know? We were just talking about that. So, I learned a long time ago, I was going to be flowing in a different stream. And that stream has taken some twists and turns and has gotten some smaller in some areas, but so be it. It's an empathetic ministry. But the whole thing about the father picking up on feeling, that's why I used to find it hard to minister on Father's Day, because I could feel people's anguish. Eddie and I talked about this one time, and it just resonated with me. And I even, the other day, I was talking to my friend Howie on the phone, and something came up about something difficult that he had gone through. And I said, just remember, Isaiah prophesied that Jesus would be a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And when I said it, we both started crying on the phone. And it's not that you're trying to be maudlin or insensitive to people's sufferings, but if you're so ethereal and optimistic and about power of intention so much that you can't feel what people are feeling without making them feel bad for what they're feeling, you're really out of touch with whatever the Christ is. You're just out of touch with it. That's why Paul said, just weep with those that weep. Don't try to make them feel better about it. I don't think she would mind me saying this, because it's not like it's not secret knowledge. But I mentioned Reba earlier, but Reba and Donnie went through a divorce. It's been 2 years ago now, I think. And I refer to Karen because Karen was their nanny when Israel and Destiny were babies. And so we've been talking lately, and she was sending me some songs that she's written recently. And she said, I've got one that I wrote about the divorce I can send you. I said, no, send it to me. And it's bleak. It's not a happy song. It's not like God's going to work it out or the sun will come out in the morning. And I told her, I said, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, but if you ever record again, you need to put this on your album as is. It doesn't throw Donnie under the bus. It's just anybody who's been through a divorce will identify with everything that you're saying in there. And it's not about the happy ending. Thank God for those of us who have been through a divorce. Yes, there is a happy ending. You're not denying that. You're also not denying that, man, there's a part of it that sucks. And I said, there's something about this song that really sets you free when you read it, because it's not depressing, it's real. It's like, oh, that's what divorce feels like. And it's not like the kind of song you just want to play every day. I mean, you would need it once in a while. But there's something that therapists say now that I really agree with. It's the idea of sitting with your pain. If you try to get past your pain too quickly, you don't really heal. That's why I've stopped saying, even when somebody has a physical injury, I don't say believing for a speedy recovery. I say believing for a thorough recovery. Because a speedy recovery sometimes isn't really recovery. It's just we want to fix you. We want to be done with you. We want you to move on. And I can tell you there are some white people that feel that way right now about black people complaining about realities in their life. It's like, I don't hate you. Just we got our own struggles too. I didn't create white privilege. Get a grip and stop complaining about it. That's easy for you to say if you're on the other side of it. Some people don't have that luxury to stop talking about it because they're still living in it. So be aware of it. Again, what's that got to do with Father's Day? Well, you know, when you're little and you have a typical relationship with your father, I'll say a typical healthy relationship, there's the idea that he's Superman. He can do anything. You know, my dad, you know, people who talk about their dads being their heroes and that sort of thing. And then as you grow and you see them go through things, you see that, wow, they're really flawed. They have their own struggles. They were not perfect. You really see it when you have your own children, because you realize, wow, parenting is a lot more challenging than I realize. And when you're on the other side of it, sometimes you become more compassionate with what a father may be feeling. So when I talk about being a realistic idealist or an idealistic realist or a a pessimistic optimist or an optimistic pessimist or an unbelieving believer. I mean, I think that's a real thing. You can, whatever your relationship was with your father, you can look at it with detachment and maturity and just be thankful that it was what it was. I mean, I could tell you today, you know, when people say, I bet you're missing your dad today, I'm like, not like he was, not like he was. Last Father's Day was a nightmare. I'm so happy we're not dealing with it. Today actually would have been harder if he had still been here in his madness at the end. So, no, I don't miss him like that at all. I'm relieved that he's out of that suffering. When people say, you're going to look back on this time of taking care of him as the most beautiful time in your life, I think, well, I must not be there yet because I don't, it must be too recent. I'm still kind of traumatized by it. I mean, your rational mind says, I know what you just said to me or what you just did is the disease talking, but wow, you sound and look exactly like the man that raised me. So, you know, your mind has to compartmentalize, like, don't take this personally and do what you got to do with taking care of his physical needs. That's very difficult. I can look at it now and say, I'm grateful I could do it. I'm grateful when somebody says, were you there when your dad crossed over? I will be eternally grateful that I was by his bedside when that happened. I'm so happy that, you know, I wasn't out like in New York and I got some, you know, I don't know what that would be doing in New York. That, I think that's sign language for partying. Like, I'm having a big time. Like, oh, really? Your dad died? I mean, I would really hate that. So I'm glad that I can say, yes, I was there when he crossed over. I actually told him to cross over. Was it a beautiful experience? Beautiful is beautifully ugly. It was a hard, sweet thing. And really, that's kind of the way life is. And so keep your theology balanced. Keep the discussion about racism going. Don't, white people, please don't opt out of it yet, because there's still more that needs to be talked about. And it does get tiring. But it's like I posted the other day, if you're tired of talking about racism, think how tired people are who are the victims of it. So, you know, we're going to have to just keep talking about it. But I still believe in dreaming. I'm still supernatural. I still believe that you have what you say. I still want to speak things into existence. And I believe that not only will Metron go on, but our best days are ahead of us. I don't know when we'll be back in the theater, but Metron, for the record, is alive and well. I haven't even gotten to the good part of my ministry yet. I mean, I'm better than I was, but wait till you hear me. 10 years from now, it's going to be amazing. So if you really hear my voice, hang in there with me, and let's stay in this journey. For those of you that are streaming, I'll read your messages in a minute, and thank you so much for your feedback. In a moment, I will post all my links. That's got how you can give to Metron, how you can give to me personally. Some of you sent things to this week, and I really do appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it, and we need it. So remember, if you give to me, there's no tax credit for that. Just be aware of that. If you give to Metron, that's a nonprofit. I'm nonprofit. I mean, Metron's nonprofit. I'm not. So just want to make sure you get that. Like, if you send something and say, put this in Metron, now I can't do that. I could go to prison for that. You have to send that. That's called personal inurement. So, and believe me, we got a little check this week that was from an account that was closed out from Church in the Now that was supposed to go to General Swilly Ministries. And don't think I didn't think for a minute, you know, I could just endorse this and take a picture of this, and Avery won't know. I mean, she won't know. They're not going to contact her. And then I thought, no, I'm too pretty to go to prison, so I better do the right thing. No, I didn't. That's not why I said it. I said it because I have integrity. And so I sent her, before I thought differently of it, I sent her a screenshot of it and said, just want you to know, they sent a check. That's why I can sleep well at night. However, if you want to send me a check, I do have Cash App, I have Venmo, I have, what else is there? I have PayPal, I'll come to your house, I have Zelle, I'll come to your house and pick it up. I'll meet you in a parking lot after hours wearing a raincoat and sunglasses. If you got a jar of change around, I'll take it to Publix over here. Dump that out. Hey, I've done it before. Times being what they are. All kidding aside, thank you for your continual support of Metron. I speak a blessing over all of you. Happy Father's Day.